Right, we're back for another episode of Counterpoints. Obviously, still no actual land Counter-Strike, so take with a grain of salt any opinions in this episode. Because the real problem we have with this is, right, forget even the online part, mate. I even used to tell people the last few years, like when we had that whole thing where it would always be blast groups where like you could even like mess around and lose a game in the opener, whatever, it didn't matter. People always overreacted, but I know why. And now they're doing it even worse because obviously now Blast starts an online tournament. I get why they do it. It's because we've been starved of CS for a few weeks. We haven't had anything to talk about and everything's been hypothetical with all the rosters. So people just want to have hot takes. Like, it's why I actually did that show, because I understand that no matter what fans tell you, it's the opposite. They love drama, they love hot takes, they love blaming people, they love praising people. Like, one thing people love, you can see even in memes, like the joke is the smart people just launder it through saying they're being silly and joking and it's just a meme. Because what you do basically is this: the second the first result happens, if you thought that team was a crap with their roster, you go, "See, I told you they were trash." Meanwhile, if you go the other way and you think it was a good meme, like all the haters are in shambles now. Like, that's what we all do. We all fucking do it all the time. So whatever. We are going to do some takes that I've no doubt will reference some of the newer rosters. In fact, one thing I was already thinking, you were quite restrained, Pimp. I'll tell you what, mate, after all the Brazilian hordes descended on you after you said they were going to be trash, bro, they could have lost all three maps of that Foot game, mate. Like, I tell you what, Foot knew what they were doing picking that, because remember the Blast Bounty format? It's like, they picked the right squad, mate. That was doable. They almost won that game. It was nuts.
Yeah, that was a close game. That was a good game of Counter-Strike, to be fair. I think Foot is a good team, you know, and they're slightly underrated. Yeah. You know, I'm glad they got to show off, you know, that they're one of the teams you should look out for 26, maybe a breakout team, you know, a team that's probably going to establish themselves as, you know, a regular contender at PGL events, you know, and occasionally they'll go to the bigger Blast events and bigger ESL events, because I think it's definitely possible for them to get inside, you know, top 20 and be one of the regular invites. I agree. They probably should have beaten Furia, to be completely honest. Molotov had a game and a half, kept them alive in a lot of scenarios. So it's not that I was hoping Furia were losing that game, but it would have been nice just to prove a point, you know, in a sense. But I think Furia is also one of those teams that they're going to ramp it up when they get on land. So everything is back to normal. I think there's been a lot of surprises, dare I say, at Blast so far. Online Counter-Strike, first game of the season, you name it. But I always have the mentality that I would like a certain amount of surprises and a certain amount of teams doing upsets, but not too many to fuck up the playoff. You know, I want to make sure that when we get into the playoffs in a couple of days, then I want to have more good games than bad games. So I think there's a decent amount of upsets, but also a decent amount of the favorites making it into the playoffs. So I think as much as I would have liked it to happen, then I think if Foot would have beaten Furia, then the playoff here
and make the ladder worse. Yeah, of course. Like, look, in reality, you do want the top 3 to 4 names all at the ladder, especially because then we get to see who actually starts on LAN as the best team, who wins the first event and stuff. That's kind of a banger angle. No, the other thing is as well, I just want to throw this out there. I am going off memory. Sadly, I did a quick Google search, but it didn't find anything, sadly, because search engines are trash now. But I actually think it was Foot specifically that I remembering the sort of rumor mill of all things getting leaked, where someone said something like that they're one of the teams that has done like a clause in their contract where you can't buy the players to get the VRS core, which is very interesting if so, because... Okay. I mean, the notion there is they want to sell them individually if they sell them at all, but otherwise it's implied it's a kind of protectionism, you know, to keep the squad together. I can see why you do it, though, because obviously in the modern day, if you are one of these smaller orgs, essentially the small orgs now, here's what's funny, as an org, you're now in the position that the old second and third best IGLs of the countries, the Stabbies and MSLs are in, where it's like, if you do too well getting someone good, yeah, the big dog just takes them, like, oh, thanks, I'll have that. And it's like, well, probably I'm going to have to start again. So, like, that's an interesting angle, certainly, because what it implies to me, Pimp, is, whereas actually to a team like Saw, look, if you ever get offered millions for a bunch of those players, you should take it. You'll never see that money again in your life. Like, it's the only way you can make the business make sense. It actually implies to me someone like Foot actually believes in the project and thinks this can go plus, like you're saying, and they want to keep it all together. It's kind of interesting in that sense. Yeah, so no, I also agree, if anyone saw them online last year, they looked really legit. Actually, them and the Inner Circle guys, some of those players clearly will be like real players in the top scene. So no, I'm with you. And also, yeah, I'll put it the other way too. At the same time, if you asked me what type of a match would Furia be most likely to lose in against a team that, I remember, they don't play at LANs, in online, and when they're all separated, they weren't even all in the same country, remember, guys, they were all in the same rooms or whatever, that would also be the most likely match to lose. So I wouldn't have overreacted too much. I would have just tormented the annoying Brazilians on Twitter. I wouldn't really have believed in my heart of hearts, like, Furia is doomed and it's over, you know, it's all good. It's all good, boys.
It's all good.
That's you know what we said as well. I feel like for us, I remember saying it. You know, they are going to be a top three, top four team. It's just whether or not are they going to win a lot of tournaments. I'm not quite sure yet, but we'll see at the finals. I think if anything, it's as you said, like it's almost impossible to conclude anything with these online games. And it's two online games. It's two best of threes. Yes. You can, if anything, you can see teams like Foot, you know, maybe punching above their weight. You saw Eyeballers as well, punching above their weight, making the games competitive. I think they did well against Vitality and obviously did well to beat FaZe. But that's where you're learning something. You learn something about the minority, you know, the smaller teams, the teams that you don't often see that much, you know. And whether or not that's online or LAN, it matters for them, because usually they play most of their games online, right? So if they perform well online versus FaZe and Vitality, as for the case of Eyeballers, that's good, because that's also where they have to perform in order to even get into the LANs in the first place. Whereas for some of the bigger teams, you know, like Furia, like Spirit, like Vitality, yes, we can do like an early sign thing, or yeah, it looks okay with Magic as an in-game leader and Spirit, but in reality, we won't know before we get to see them online, and we won't know before Spirit gets to play a good team. So it's very... You know, it's very modest what we learned so far, but that's why I'm excited for the weekend. I think there's some cool games happening, and depending on who picks who in the draft show tomorrow, then if anything, the semi-final should be quite banging with some of the top teams.
Same thing obviously applies to every team that I just said earlier. Like, I'm not going to take FaZe and Na'Vi and act like the losses online are like the end, but I do think it's a good jumping off point, because one thing we were talking about, well, since there haven't been any LAN matches yet, we've done these online games, which even have this weird bounty comport. They're not even a normal bracket that's seeded, etc. So that's another thing people actually miss about this tournament, bro. The whole point of the tournament is to potentially create upsets by allowing you to pick the team that's most favourable for you. I always pointed that out last year when they did it. That's why, actually, Eternal Fire, the team now Aurora, actually was really clever with who they picked. Remember, they picked like Vitality because they had like their Anubis matchup into like, I think it was like Na'Vi or something. That's how they got to the final. They were actually the second best team there. They just gave the system correctly. And then the difference is, if you want to see like what I actually think, sadly, Blast thought the tournament would be, which it isn't, it's actually what Eyeballers did. Eyeballers, after they beat FaZe, the whole reason they picked Vitality, it's not because they actually thought they could win. It's just because it's like, lol, why not? Like, look, we're never going to bloody play these teams anyway, so why don't we just play the best team in the world? Like, let's just do it for funsies. I think Blast thought would be more like that, whereas actually, most of these teams, fair play, this is what incentives are for, mate. They're trying to win the money. Most teams are trying to pick the team that's most likely. If people don't know, if you look at Foot and Fury, there was even like map pool overlap. Like, that was like one of the few teams that had even had a chance to like match up well, etc. And then also, it's online, which is where Foot plays all the time. So, no, but anyway, obviously, now Na'Vi and FaZe both got upset by what to other people will be like relative nobodies, or like, what the hell, you're these teams. So the biggest conversation is this. Those are two of the teams, Pimp. It's one of my angles always, is I always say this, and the problem is to a fan, they'll never get it. I always say this line that goes, there are teams where actually doing too well at the major can ruin your team. I mean, the joke is, I actually think on a minor level, that did happen when Spirit won the major, because they won it from that ridiculous Magics thing. Yeah, true, they like had some good performances in the first season last year, but they were barely, aside from Blast, they were barely winning tournaments. It took roster moves to start winning again and actually be a true threat. Whereas the point is, if they hadn't have won that major, and because it was winning it that actually ruined them, if they'd have even come like semis, they probably would have done a harsh roster move already, and they could have started 2025 out race stronger. So these two teams, FaZe and Na'Vi, let's just start with FaZe. Like, look, the biggest problem with the FaZe one is obvious to me, Pimp. It's this. People are doing the thing now where, because they made the finals run and because they beat Na'Vi, who's a legit team of mouse, these are real LAN teams, like, we're supposed to forget that if the history guy did defuse, then that wouldn't have happened. And if that wouldn't have happened, I'm sorry, I wouldn't go to... So look, here's the problem with that particular move. Because Jacob also looked better as the tournament went on, I feel like we have to go somewhere in the middle. Like, maybe if history had defused, we'd have overhated on them and they actually would have had a little bit more potential. But at the same time, that miracle run in the playoffs, like, I'm sorry, I just don't believe that happens in any of these tournaments. Mate. Like, I feel like in these tournaments, it's not the major, you don't have the magic, there's not going to be some Carrigan. I think what will happen is you'll just go when it's not like the Krakow and the fucking Colognes of the world, you'll just be going to a normal tournament. And this is actually the beauty of Counter-Strike, because we have like tournaments every few weeks. You'll just lose like 9th to 11th, you'll just not be that good, and like, you'll be beaten by teams that actually, the joke is, if Mouse played you again but just in a group, they'll just beat you, mate. They'll just beat you 2-0, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of as well. Like, I think it's one of the things that I hate the most, you know, especially in fandom in Counter-Strike, when fans are unable to see the perspective in a team winning or doing well at a certain tournament. Because I feel like FaZe is a great example now. I think there's context to the situation in FaZe, because I don't think they have any money. I think we spoke about that a bit last episode as well. I think what's going on within FaZe Clan, obviously, and with all the content creators, and I know they're separated, you know, esports being one department and the content another, but I don't think in general FaZe have too much money or too much willingness, maybe that is, you know, to even go out and spend money. So for FaZe as an organization, I think what happened during the major, that was the best thing they could have hoped for, because they were like, oh, we may have a team where we don't have to spend any money, you know, which is also why I think they signed Jacob in the first place. He was not that expensive.
Yes.
I think the whole trade with Twist and Unleash, I think bottom line, I don't think that was an expensive trade. Maybe it was just a 50 or so, like an even out deal, you know, where we're both, yes, winning out. So in that regard, I think that was one of the worst things that could have happened to FaZe, because I agree with you. Had they gone out in stage one, that team would have been dead, and probably that would have been a bit of a shame. So we didn't really get to see any of the potential or get to see some of the players stick together. Or you can imagine a world where Twist literally just joined, you know, and he never got a real shot to figure out, you know, how he could make FaZe better before it all exploded. So I agree in that sense. On the other hand, I feel like them making that major playoff run, and especially, and I hate to do this, and it's annoying to me because I like the guy a lot, and I think he's one of my favorite players to watch when on it. But Brokey, he's been struggling massively ever since Cologne. He came back, he had one good tournament at Cologne, a decent tournament. It wasn't good, it was just decent. And ever since, he's been struggling. And then he was bad in stage one, he was getting better on stage two, and then he stepped it up, you know, in stage three and doing the playoff as well. And he also bought himself maybe two or three more months on FaZe. I think it would have been better for Brokey as an individual to find another team. I also think FaZe would have been better off, you know, finding a different AWP player than Brokey. The thing is, what happens is when you then go into the major playoff and all of a sudden you find yourself in the final and you've been struggling for such a long time, if you're FaZe, you also start to believe within the team that, ooh, look what we did right here, you know, we just need to work a little bit harder, we need to get off to a good start in 26, do a bit of a boot camp, and maybe we're not getting into the finals anymore, but we'll establish ourselves as a top four, a top five team, we've just shown that we can do it. But in reality, I think the players know that's not going to happen. I think the players know that, you know, as you said as well, what happened during the major was, it wasn't lucky, it was deserved in isolation, but it's not something they could repeat, you know.
Exactly.
It's not something I think they're going to repeat. And I very much share your sentiment that FaZe is one of those teams I think will consistently place as 9th to 11th, you know, or maybe best case 5th to 8th, you know, and maybe occasionally getting to a playoff. But I do look at that lineup and I think to myself, when you have Twist, when you have Frozen, and when you have Kerrigan, you're not supposed to be content with being 5th to 8th. You're not supposed to be content, yes, with going out in 9th to 12th place, you know, more often than not. I think you're supposed to be a team that is always striving and almost consistently making the playoff. And I just don't see that happening with the current iteration of FaZe. And I wish to be wrong, to be completely honest, because I think FaZe is, it's an entertaining team, and Counter-Strike is more fun when FaZe is playing, and especially my job, you know, being at the desk, it's a more fun team to engage with, talk about, and almost impossible, you know, sometimes to predict, which makes it fun to deal with. But I'm afraid that, you know, if I thought Furia were not going to win too many tournaments, I'm almost, you know, certain that I don't think FaZe is going to be a team making playoff consistently. And I think they will have to change something within that team pretty early on into the season in order to save maybe what could be the rest of the season, or save their Cologne, you know, from an embarrassment. My question is, you know, are they going to do it? Do they have the money to do it? And what happened during the major, is that enough of a cushion for them to go, no, we're giving it 6 months. Like, no matter what happens, we're giving it 6 months. Because I could be a little bit afraid that that's what's going to happen. Because, as you said, you know, had they gone out in stage one, you bet you Brokey wouldn't be on that lineup right now. And maybe the entire team would have gone south, you know, or they would have picked up two new players or whatnot. But given what happened at the major, everyone just bought themselves some more time. And, you know, there's two ways to look at it. Either every one of those players who bought a bit more time, they really ramped it up, you know, and they proved that it was worth the gamble, sort of. And otherwise, it's just going to be another 6 months of FaZe struggling, which is what I'm leaning towards right now. I really hope to be proven wrong, both by Brokey and by FaZe, because I think they're entertaining to watch, but I don't have high hopes, to be honest.
No, that, I also agree. You have to set the conditions of, like, there's a difference between theoretically what could they do or should they do, and like what the practical realities, which in this case are obviously governed by money and whether you can do buyouts and replace people, etc. I mean, an obvious angle to me would be this. I've got the perfect way to phrase the Jacob thing, because there's just a great example out there, which is, I always said this and no one ever has an answer for me. I always say, if this guy was some super talent, right, where were all the people hyping him? Like, where were the other people interested in the move? Where was the, like, you know, when you sign a player, this happens with every good player, by the way, that goes to tier one, you get a player, a team that comes out like, oh, I was going to sign him, but like a week later, like, you know, that one where people wanted Wrinkle even when he went to NIP, they were like, but they were a month too late. It's like, oh, fucking Nip got him first and they got him under contract. First of all, no one's ever said that about Jacob. And then secondly, my problem's not the idea he can't play in the lands. It's the idea he can be in FaZe Clan. Because I'll give you the example, right? His teammate now plays in Gamer Legion. That's an appropriate level team. If you go to that team, first of all, you get a chance to develop. You can also be one of the better players in the team. You don't get hated on because it's little game league. Oh, by the way, another example would be like a Heroic type team. These are appropriate levels of that. Because my big problem with Jacob is, even if one day he can develop, how far is this one day away? Mate, Carrigan is like... The joke is when the Grim Reaper arrives, he'll do that Spider-Man meme. He's old as fuck, bro. Like, he has to win now. He hasn't got till, like... Yeah. Look, yeah. These might be famous as words, but I don't think he's got till 2028. He's got to start winning now, mate. He's got to actually have a very good... Like, in fact, Cologne, like, mate, you should be looking at if you're Carrigan's. These might be my last two big mages I could ever win. So you're going to have a squad now that can win. And as you say, it'd be one thing if you're a million miles from it, mate. Like, if you look at some of the other squads, like Team Liquid's a mess right now, if they're good players, they can't even think about winning the major. As you say, if I start a team tomorrow and I go, right, guys, I'm starting a brand new organisation. IGL, got Carrigan in there. Like, Aggressive Rifler, I've got Twists. And do you want to know what? I've also got Frozen as my sort of, like, lurky type ride. Bro, you're going to be like, well, who are the other two players? This team could win the major. Problem is, when you then say it's Jacob and then Brokey in 2026, all of a sudden you go, all right, you had me for a second there. I thought I was getting a bit hyped, but then when you tell me, like, you know, those are the other players, especially the Orpah, like, now I'm kind of not hyped anymore. So the other angle also, I think, with the Brokey one is this. Mate, they've already bought the Jacob guy, and as you say, they had to probably do great business to get Twists into the team. It was like, here's the other thing people don't think about. Holy moly, mate, what if Twists hadn't wanted to join? What if they'd have just kicked the Legion, got another Jacob? Like, what fucking position would they be in right now? Like, if anything, Twists has actually played even better in FaZe than anyone even imagined he could. So you already kind of got a miracle in that sense, that he's resurrected his whole form. But the other problem you have is, if you're going to replace Brokey, it's quite famous that there aren't that many big name AWPers, especially not stars. So again, let's say you've done the gamble that people want, because you know when everyone goes, get a Molodoy. Guys, half of you hate on that Grix guy, and the joke is, he was more hyped than Molodoy. Like, that is the Molodoy level play. It's very rare you're going to get Molodoy. Also, by the way, I'll just throw this out there, Molodoy himself might not even be that appropriate for FaZe, and so far he hasn't performed at the majors. Like, that's FaZe's whole thing, is being really good at the majors. So even the joke is, even Molodoy might not be able to do that. We don't know yet. We have to wait till he does it, don't we? So I don't know who they could get at this point in time. I also think they're in a tough spot. It's just that essentially with this one, it's one of those rare ones where maybe you can't make any moves, but just this roster isn't it, is it? So that's why I have to keep saying I wish you would make a move. Because, and then lastly, I'll throw this out there, here's why I also don't buy personally that you can have people like Jacob or just take a random person like a random AWPer. Because even though certainly I think Carrigan is one of the best players, IGL's at implementing players, obviously he's done amazing things with stand-ins, etc. In his style of play, everyone I know who's gone fully international, not the way you go, like, you know, when he used to be like three Ukrainians and two Russians, or something. When you go fully international with no culture, no language shared, like, everyone says it's really hard to play like super tactical CS. It's hard to, like, you know, do like a whole system and a structure, and this person does this at this time. So if you sign players to FaZe, the reason why they always signed veterans or polished players in the past is Carrigan's whole thing is like, right, if you guys can essentially all do your own job and I don't have to babysit you and hold your hand, then I can call all these great strats and I can focus on being the chess master. I can fuck with the veto, etc. I can't do those things if I'm like essentially like raising someone up and develop. Like, if I'm going to work with Brokey, like, people keep saying, put him in the right roles. I'm like, mate, FaZe isn't about that. FaZe is where you walk in and you're supposed to do your job from day one, and it's supposed to be game on to win. In fact, that's the saddest thing. That's, I think, what really bums me about FaZe is, you look at before, there was warning signs of the teams going down, but still all the names joining were fire me. I mean, even Elise joining, that was a really good player who couldn't be higher on the HLTV Top X because he never got in any playoffs with Cole, seemingly. Like, you looked at that, you were like, that's a perfect FaZe signing. You come in the door, you get to a better team, suddenly you win a big tournament or you're in the finals of a tournament, you're like, right, we're back. So I know what you mean. I just thought the real bummer for FaZe is, one, the clock is ticking on the Carrigan angle. And by the way, the soon as Carrigan ends, that we just get an even bigger problem at that point. What is FaZe? I even suspect at one point, mate, they might just shut the fucking team down. It's why you almost have to do the copium of if Carrigan retires, please become the coach. Because otherwise, like, are they really going to keep a team going if it's Jacob, fucking Brokey, and IGL we've never heard of? And you know what I mean? Like, at that point, you just shut the squad down, don't you? Part of the magic is Carrigan and all these epic runs. So if you face it, I don't even know what to tell you, because I don't think you can sign anyone. I just feel like it's just going to be a wasted season.
Yeah, I'm afraid so too. I think you make an excellent point in saying, you know, Carrigan, that, like, he has to win now. Obviously, we don't know with Carrigan. He's like, he's a very, he's a very motivated individual, and I think Kerrigan will be one of those players that he'll walk away when he thinks he can't do it anymore. Like, he'll walk away when he thinks he's done, and there will be enough goodwill in Kerrigan to, you know, let's say that FaZe does shut down, or let's say they waste the first 6 months of the year. Like, he would always be able to join a decent project. Like, he has one more good big project in him if he wants to, whether that's going to G2 or going to Na'Vi if LXB wanted, like, whatever that may be, you know, go back to save Astralis. Kerrigan has one more good year in him, but I agree, like, if you're Kerrigan, and even Twist to some degree as well, like, you gotta win now. And I would even argue Frozen as well. Frozen is, I think, to me, interesting, because when he moved from Mouse to FaZe, everyone agreed that that's like taking a step up, you know, and that was supposed to be taking a step up. But ever since Frozen joined, FaZe have become this team where it's a lot more streaky, you know. It's not consistently them getting deep into tournament, you know. They go into the major and nobody has any expectations, and all of a sudden they find themselves in the final, but they don't really win a lot. And it's been like that for FaZe for 2 years almost, where, like, expectations are never really met consistently, but then occasionally they'll blow out, you know. Occasionally they'll go into a final, we'll be like, oh, that's the FaZe we want. And that's what it's been like for Frozen. I think if you ask me, and if you ask Frozen, do you think he would be satisfied with the amount of trophies he's won within FaZe ever since leaving Mouse? Because I think he'd be super fucking disappointed. Like, you're wasting the prime of Frozen right now not doing anything. And I think, to me, that's a bit of a crime, because I think Frozen is fantastic. I think Twist, as well, as you said, like, he came back and he is a miracle in FaZe. Imagine where the fuck FaZe would be if Twist was just playing at the level we expect him to be at. Like, it's crazy that you get rid of Elise, you know. Clearly didn't work out winning FaZe Clan. That's fair enough. You get Twist in, and he's playing his best brand of Counter-Strike in 4 years. Like, absolutely. If that's not enough to take you to the next level, or to make a couple of playoffs, you know, and not just a, dare say, fluke during the major, then what the hell is going on? So I agree. Like, it's not only Kerrigan, I feel like, needs to win now and needs to find success relatively soon, which was also my whole point about bringing Rain to the major instead of Jacob. I thought to myself, like, you cannot waste a major, you know, schooling a kid or giving him experience, you know, and maybe hoping he steps up, you know, because he was, let's be honest, in stage one, if FaZe would have gone out, you know, to that defuse,
he would have got flamed to fuck, mate.
Exactly. You'd be like, yeah, why the fuck did you bring this guy instead of Rain? Like, that was the obvious point to make out. Then luckily for him, and luckily for FaZe, he stepped it up in stage two and three and proved that there may be some potential. That's fair enough, and fair games for him for doing that. But I think more so than that, it's just Kerrigan and Frozen, and to some degree Twist as well. Like, if you're not in contention to win trophies now, from an individual point of view as well, like, I don't understand if Frozen would be like, okay, listen, I tried, I went here, it's been great for 3 years, I need to move somewhere else, you know, where I can win trophies. I need to go somewhere where I can win trophies, which is why when the rumors about him maybe joining Na'Vi circulated a little bit, I was like, that makes sense, you know. I think there's a higher likelihood
absolutely
that you're gonna win trophies with Blave within Na'Vi. And I think the same for Twist. I think he came back to FaZe because Liquid obviously didn't work out, and that was not a nice experience, you know, Kadian in and out and having to in-game lead himself, yada, yada, yada. But I think if you're Twist, you're not giving FaZe 2 years of your career. Like, you're not giving FaZe another 2 years of what is supposedly, you know, maybe not your prime, but close to it with the way he's playing. If they don't find success within six months, you know, leading up to Cologne, I'm with you. I think there's a world where FaZe may sell off whatever they can sell off and shut down the team, because you said, like, Brokey's not going to run that team together with Jacob and a new in-game leader and a new star instead of Frozen. And if I'm Frozen, without knowing the contractual situation within FaZe, let's say that his contract runs out end of this year, which is likely, I think, then I'd be looking, you know, to move on. You know, I don't think that's where I would want to be if I'm an individual that is chasing trophies. So I think they're in a very tough spot, and I think the GM right now within FaZe, you know, running that esports department and the Counter-Strike team, is in a very tough spot, because can you attract new talent? Do you have money to buy new talent? Like, what are you going to do to make the team better? And if you don't do that, then you risk losing the entire, foundation of the team. Because I think as soon as one of those guys leave, whether that's Kerrigan, Frozen, or Twist, one of them goes, that team falls apart. Yes. So you need to keep all three happy at the same time. And the only way to do that is by start winning. And as I said, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
By the way, that's another example of, like, this is what's bad. They're not in a great spot now, aside from that one major run. But they've also had to have all these, like, things happen that had uncertainty attached to them, like Twists get way better. I'll give you another one. The idea of Frozen didn't go to Na'Vi. First of all, if that move is true, and by the way, unlike when I told you 2 years ago, whatever, Elijah asked to join Na'Vi, the problem is, I imagine Blade had heard the stories already and was just like, nah, not really, mate. I'd rather have a different player. Yeah. I actually could totally see Frozen, mate. He's just a guy who does his job and does what he's told. I could totally see him loving playing with Blade system and Blade liking a player like him. I could even see Blade making that guy like an excellent player. So I don't hate that move. In fact, in a weird way, when I heard that rumour, which if people don't know, was all but confirmed, because someone asked they asked Frozen about it, I think maybe at the major even, when they'd already made like a run or something like that. And he did something where he sort of almost implied like, yeah, sort of or whatever, but it didn't happen. It was like his actual answer was something like, yeah, yeah, nah, but yeah, or something. It was like, it was implied maybe he did think about that move or whatever. What I heard behind the scenes was the notion that he didn't do it because he thought like, oh, I want to be loyal to Carrigan or whatever. Who knows, maybe Twist's coming back was on the table and they were already talking about that. So maybe he thought, I want to play with Twists again. It implied to me he did it out of loyalty, mate. He didn't do it because he thought FaZe was better than Na'Vi. He just did it out of loyalty. And I'll give you an angle that you can actually see if you go and check these news posts, but you have to read between the lines. But I heard something behind the scenes that makes that whole thing even spicier in the second season, which is if you ever go and check, when they signed Jacob, even in the post immediately, they bench Elige. I think they might have even benched him slightly before. But it was already known that when Jacob comes in, he's actually replacing Elige. Now, when they signed Twist, they didn't say anything about who left. At the time, it was listed as a six-man roster with Carrigan and Rain. And you just had to know, and then it obviously ended up being Rain that went at the end. Now, here's the spicy thing I heard behind the scenes from legit sources. I heard that even within FaZe, nobody actually knew who was going to be removed. And that, listen, that ends the part that I heard. I will now insert my speculation. Here's what my speculation is, bro. I think that the reason why nobody knew is because I think there was an internal discussion, should Carrigan or Rain be the one that leaves? And the fact that Rain's just left and magically become an IGL mate, and the fact he added Twists, who's been an IGL recently, that makes me wonder if they are actually thinking internally, like, either Carrigan, do you want to retire? Or maybe some players were even like, maybe you should, or let's... That's an interesting angle too, mate, because I also feel like it's not as obvious a project as people think. Like, this sounds like a mess, this team, mate. Like, if anything, they've actually sort of, it isn't just like that they had this great result. They've sort of locked even in, like I say, to a half-decent team. I could see like four or five different variations of this squad. Like, imagine the team right now is like Jacob, Twist, but Twist isn't playing as well. Frozen's a bit bombed out because he stayed for Carrigan, but then Carrigan's retired or been kicked out. And then he knows he could have been in Na'Vi the whole time. Like, man, that sounds like a nightmare project. And they weren't like that far in a couple of moments away from that being what happened. If anything, they've rolled the dice and sort of come up with like an 8, not a 10, but like an 8. Like, holy fuck, that's not bad actually. I don't know why I said 10 next, it's not 10 times. Whatever, you get the point. If it was out of 10 on a dice, you fuck, whatever. The D10, you can have the one in Dungeons and Dragons. I don't even know if that's a real thing, probably is. But yeah, that's a mad one, mate. Like, I don't know where they go with it. By the way, we can easily transition this to the Na'Vi convo if you want. Yeah. Because I'll tell you what Na'Vi's problem is. It's the other way around, Pimp. Because their whole team is based on like Blade and his sister, which I think actually is why when they watch out at the major, they keep him. Because you think like, oh, we had a really good run. We could have been in the final. We're one of the only teams that could have beat him. Yeah, but here's my problem with that. If that's your best run as well, just like FaZe, yeah, but you didn't even do it. You actually had a tournament, by the way, where Wonderful was bawling, where Imma was actually doing really pretty fucking well. The Mikaze guy had like tons more impact than you'd expect. Again, that's almost about all the best case scenarios, but you didn't make the final. You didn't win it. Like, you kept top four. That's cool. By the way, beating Furia, that's cool. Although they also give you the assist on that one if you saw the play. I'll tell you what the problem is when you come to Na'Vi, and this is what everyone seems to have. I don't know anyone who can actually agree on who the person you should remove if you make the roster move is. People go everywhere. Like, there's like Wonderful always has his haters. There's still some people, by the way, are stuck like 2 years ago on like Imma's just pure shit or something. Like, seems pretty good to me, but whatever. Obviously, there's some people here on Mikaze, not just because of his country or whatever, because shout out Kassad. Some people just hate on him because his numbers are crazy, you know, and he's not like some stud young rookie, you know, he's just like kind of like a good player who's shuts. That's the question, Pimp. If we're going to blame Na'Vi, similar set of circumstances. What do they do? Like, who would you even consider removing? How would you consider reinvigorating Na'Vi? Or what does Na'Vi need to go to a higher level and win the major? What do they need?
See, that's a fun one, right? Because I remember having I think I did a podcast with you and Sam maybe a year and a half ago when Na'Vi were like winning everything.
Yep.
And I said like the biggest problem for Na'Vi is that like everyone is kickable and no one is kickable. Like, that's the issue with having that system.
I mean, think of all the rumors, even about the idea Lexi B was going to get booted or join another team. Like, that rumor was there too. Yeah, the joke is everyone except Bit seemingly ever once kicked out of Na'Vi.
Exactly. It's like I feel the exact same thing about Na'Vi today than I did even when they were winning 2 years ago. Like, everyone is kickable. Like, there's no, the most safe player within Na'Vi, I'd say, is Bit still. I think Bit is like the biggest prospect, and he's Ukrainian, obviously. He's been there for a long time. There's a bit of legacy, you know, and I think Bit is when Bit is on, you know, and when you really get him loaded. You know, he is the best player, I feel like, winning Na'Vi. It's just a little bit of a shame we don't see the best of Bit right now, and that's maybe a different conversation. But I'd say the other four players are capable, in a sense, or they are question marks. And I think that's the same case now as it was 2 years ago. So it's almost like the strength of Na'Vi, which is this team play, the blade system, et cetera, it also becomes their weakness when you then want to make changes, because there's no obvious guy to pick out on, you know. There's no obvious guy to replace him with. I almost, you know, if you want to tie it together with the whole face thing as well, I was low-key hoping that Kerrigan heading into this season would go somewhere else. And I think I spoke with you like maybe a year ago as well, suggesting that I think Kerrigan is probably doing his best work when he's integrating a new team or integrating himself into a new team. I would love to see Kerrigan in G2. I would love to see Kerrigan... would have loved to see Kerrigan in Astralis before they went international and you know, just decided to never be relevant again, as happening right now. I would love to see Kerrigan go somewhere. I would even love to see a swap between Alexi B and Kerrigan. You know, what happens if you put Kerrigan and Blade together? How can they do stuff, you know? Because Kerrigan has never really had a great coach behind him. Sorry, Neo, but I say great coach in the sense of tactical, you know, in the sense of a system. Neo is a people's manager kind of guy, you know. He's exactly what Kerrigan wants in face, but I think it would be super, super interesting to see Kerrigan in that role. That's my issue with Na'Vi as well. Like, I don't know how to fix it, because I think Blade constantly have this feeling that, yeah, a little more progress in the system. Or, you know, now we have Wonderful popping off. If that continues, then I get Bit elevated again. We saw him, like, he can always find positives in whatever's going on, you know, and he trusts so much in his own process and trusts so much in the work he can do that you're kind of, like, grasping and hoping that, okay, someone needs to step up, you know, or something needs to change, or something needs to progress. But I don't see that happening either. So I feel like it's, for me, Na'Vi has always been, like, the biggest weakness is the mentality part of the game. I think whenever I watch them and observe them at tournaments, at LANs, when I stand behind them as well, it can be a cultural thing, but they have one of the worst, at least from the outside, it seems like to have one of the worst moods, you know, that they're constantly nagging at each other. They're not really energized. They're not like pumping up each other, more so like just hitting desks 24/7. And I wouldn't say moaning, but almost close to it. It feels like the environment within the team is not as positive and as energetic as I would like it to see when you compare them to other teams. And maybe that's, you know, how it is within Na'Vi, and maybe it doesn't affect the players, but I can't help to feel that some of those players would probably function better if it wasn't like that. And that's always been a big hurdle. The only way you change that is by changing some of the personnel within the team. And Makasa coming in, he's not going to change the culture within Na'Vi. Like, that's not a cultural figure that's all going to sudden come in with aura and change all the things. So I feel like if I'm Na'Vi and it doesn't work out here in the beginning of the season, I'm more lenient to give them, you know, the first 6 months of the year, give them until Cologne. But then if they don't really find the success they're looking for, I would look at a player. If I'm Blade, I would look at someone who can bring in a new cultural aspect to the team. I'm not saying you need to get rid of Alexi B. I just think that the player you sign needs to have a certain amount of experience and needs to have a certain amount of personality that it can change whatever the fuck that's going on within Na'Vi, instead of signing a player that has come into Na'Vi and then adopt the culture that is already within the team. Because I really do feel, from having stood behind Na'Vi for the better part of a year and a half with this current lineup, that a lot of the games they lose because they just lose it mentally, you know, and that's not really an excuse I want to give them when I'm talking about them on the desk anymore, you know. Yeah, maybe the first 6 months or maybe in a rough period you can, you know, give them a bit of a leeway, but I feel like that's been something the players have spoke about, that's something the performance coach has spoke about, that's something Blade has spoke about. It's been a topic for now a year and a half, and at that point it gets old news, you know. So if it hasn't changed within a year and a half, why am I supposed to believe that it's ever going to change unless you change the personnel that is actually creating said culture? So that's how I look at Na'Vi. And again, who would you kick? Who would you change? No clue, to be completely honest. It very much depends on who's still engaged in the project. I think Wonderful is a player that I'm looking at, you know, that he's a better version of Brokey. And I think if Wonderful continues to play well, I always feel like he was being singled out a bit too much when it was not going too well in Na'Vi. I think he's way better than his reputation is, and I'm glad he showed that during. Yeah, so I'd even say that to me, him and Alexi B are like the next two I put in the safe category next to Bit. And then I'm looking at Makasi, I'm looking at Emma as well. And at that point, you know, it depends on how they develop the next 6 months.
Yeah, the sad thing is, because we got teased by this rumour, which may indeed have been a real thing, that Frozen could have joined. That actually is a great signing, mate. I would love that move. Like, I'd like to see that for both parties, especially once our new phase was kind of done. Like, I'd like to see what you could do with that. Like, I even think of some of the other players. By the way, I'll tell you what, if we always complain about Team Liquid and those players don't work, give fucking Blade some of those players, mate. You know, give Blade Nerd, see what he does with him. You know what I mean? Give him, you pick. They've got a bunch of fucking good players in that team. Like, you could surely do something with a bunch of them. The problem you have is this, right, which is, I told Richard this years ago, right, if everyone could cast their minds back to 2021 when we were online, if you remember, right, online early on was when Gambit was the one dominating the scene, and they were, at the time, they were better than Na'Vi, who had that, like, insane land lineup, but obviously then they'd had to change out and bring in fucking Bit as, like, a rookie, and they were working him in, and when that was all initially going on, people forget, it's only when we got to the lands that Bit was insane. Actually, online, they were doing him like Nevera, where he would play, like, one or two maps, and then he was like, actually, he was kind of nothing, like his stats weren't that great, he was a rookie, but if you're playing, as we've seen later, in a team with simple electronic, it's also like nightmare mode for a rookie, because you're like doing bad, and then it isn't a veteran like pat you on the shoulder, like, it's alright kid, you get next time, they're like, you stupid fucking idiot, it's like, no, but in Russian or whatever, like that is what was going on. So what people forget is this, that's actually where there was like this mini drama. It's actually where, as far as I know, I think the whole like Richard and fucking Overdrive beef came from, because what happened was, Richard did a comment where he said something like, it was something like Na'Vi played like clowns, but because he then criticised Blade, right? If you don't know, guys, I can tell you right now, most of those Eastern European players, they might be okay in an interview in English, but they don't actually have really strong conversational English. So, for example, if it was a podcast of me and Richard Lewis talking in English in our like accents and stuff, they're not going to get a lot of it. How they get it, here's the joke, mate. People don't get this. They've been getting info the same way we're all getting it about them now. Someone posts it, translated on a telegram, part of a quote, and we all react to that. So you know how we all react to things that, like, we don't even know how true they are said on telegram, or if someone mistranslated what was said by Donk or Chopper or Ali, we just take it as like, oh, that's what they said, and then we all act like we heard them say it, when actually there's like a fucking weird game of telephone going on between it where it might have even been scoffed. The problem basically was, Simple himself even flamed Richard, because he took that as Richard was saying that Blade was a clown. But when Richard was criticizing Blade, he meant the sense that, like, look, if you've got like peak Simple and electronic, like, you're supposed to be like winning these tournaments, man. Like, you're supposed to be the best team. But I told Richard back then, and it's actually something that no one believed at the time, that was when Blade said his infamous quote, you may be known now, where he was like, give me 6 months with the roster or something. Now, unfortunately, because he said it at a time when Na'Vi lost to Gambit, people took that as some, almost like if a football coach, like the obvious example would have been like Ruben Amorim, he just kept sort of saying like, well, just wait till later, like, give me time, I need to set the formation, give me more time. And eventually it's like, we need to win now, mate. Like, we're not waiting the fucking 3 years to then start. The clock started when he came in the door. That's just the sport, I'm afraid. But here's what's funny. I actually did, and look, I won't pretend I was psychic, but I did tell Richard, believe it or not though, Richard, you could even go back and watch the shows, if there was any coach though that I could believe, it isn't just making an excuse when they say, give me 6 months, it's Blade. And the reason why is this. I actually know from talking to people in the Ukrainian scene, the real reason why Blade could never get out of Flipside in CSGO wasn't just that, like, look, if people don't know, he was a Hunden level fragger. Like, he was really bad, but he was supposed to be the mastermind. But if you remember Flipside in CSGO, if people think James bad, he played some nightmare fuel, like early 1.6 style, like literally from spawn, you go to this spot at this time, then I say go, and you go around the court. Like, he didn't play any of the sort of, like, you know, the Fnatic phase type CS that people like. Where it's like loose and you play off and you play, you know, you go from a base, but then you see how the players decide the round and you make mid-round call. He was doing a lot of the really old school. My joke used to be, people like them think they're playing StarCraft, you know what I mean? They're just like, I'm moving my unit out and then I'm like probing, but they think they're the one who controls it all. So the problem is, the reason why Blade stuck with that is because he had an idea in mind, which is what all the people, your boy MSL used to do this. The reason why they get stuck in thinking that type of tactic works, it's because in theory, if it did, it would be the ultimate style. Like, if all the players could do exactly their part at exactly that time, it would give the IGL full control. You would be playing StarCraft, and like in StarCraft, where one human's actually the one making all the decisions, you could have the best game plan to counter what they're doing. And what people like Blade and MSL always thought was, if I'm reading the game well and you do exactly what I say, then we'll win because my brain will beat them, basically. I'm a better IGL than their IGL. So essentially, I always said this, we've got a great quote in English, it might even come from Latin or something, to be fair, but it's a famous famous quote people know that says the perfect is the enemy of the good. Because sometimes when you have something that is good already, you actually do keep fucking with it and tweaking it and do, and you keep thinking I can make it perfect. And in doing so, sometimes actually you fuck it up and you don't actually get like efficiency out of it. Like you go too far the other way. And so basically my point is, I do think if you've ever listened to how Blade talks, there is a bit of that. Like he still has the same excuses and reasons now, Pimp. Like if you ever see an interview with him after they've just made a roster move or one or two tournaments into the season when you're not even at the big event, he'll always be talking about things like which event they're peaking for, or like the idea of like you're just about making progress now, like you're doing nothing. I think he once even said last year, mate, that it wasn't even about winning tournaments now. Like he didn't even put that as like the there's the expectation, which is quite alien, because in the modern day everyone's used to that thing that even the shittest player at the major goes, my dream is to win the major. You know, his whole thing was more sort of like a, you know, let's get to this level first and then once we're there we'll do that. So I do think Blade is a really like systems based thinker who thinks like you're saying, if he has more time and he has more time to break the game down and he has more time to tell Mikaze what to do and he has more time to integrate him. I think he always thinks essentially like, you just, if you give me unlimited time, eventually I'll figure it all out, I'll get it working so that this team can win. And the real problem is this, Pimp, this is the really tough part, because at least with FaZe I can tell them, mate, you were shit before the major, you were even good at the beginning of the major, you even had some flukes at the major. The problem here is this: one, like the example I said about Richard in 2021, well, at the end, Blade was right on that one. They were a motherfucker at the end of the year, mate. They were one of the most dominant teams ever. Similarly, if I look at this squad now and I go, Blade, these players can't be the best, mate. How are you going to win? He could go, I already did it in 2024. And I have to go, well, shit, he's got me again, hasn't he? Like, I can't argue. I never thought that was going to happen in 2024, mate. I've always said the reason why me and you were both right and wrong is at the time we were right. At the time they won that major, it was a fluke. It was ridiculous. And I always say, if they'd have played how they played at that major in the summer, they never would have done any of the shit they did. But somehow, a few months later, they did actually like percolate into some insane team that still didn't have the best players, but somehow could win against everyone. And it looked like all of Blade's game plans were coming true. So unfortunately, I can see why he's stubborn. Like essentially, a lot of times, if he'd have listened to the rest of us, he would have been the one that had fucked his career. The problem is, though, if you're stubborn, eventually it will bite you in the arse. And I don't know what they could do this season, mate. Like, my biggest problem is this: I'm so scared they'll just be like the sixth best team, which might not sound bad. You might think that's not a problem, is it? Yeah, but bro, if you've got in theory the best coach and you have pieces that could be, again, it's like the FaZe Clan thing. Why are we settling for six? Surely we'd got him for the title.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good point you're making. And just to summarize it, I think like that's his weakness. You know, no one is flawless. Because I think Blade is, at least to me, like there's a conversation to be had whether or not he's the best coach, you know, and most influential coach Counter-Strike has ever seen. Because I agree with you, what he's been able to do with some of those Na'Vi rosters, you know, throughout time, what he did in 24, you know, making that JL version of Na'Vi the best team in the world for the better part of 6 months is ridiculous, you know, to be completely honest. So I get that, but I feel like they had time, you know. I feel like they've had time now with Mikaze. I feel like they had time with four of the players who's now been part of Na'Vi for, 2 years? You know, the only thing you changed was Mikaze for JL. And I'm running out of patience. And I think, to be fair, I think Blade is too as well. And then it comes down to contractual situations, what players are on the market. And I think just to summarize that, I think I'm also afraid that Na'Vi will just be the sixth best team in the world, but I'm almost hoping that they're able to at least stabilize at that point, because then I think by summer they will still have the attraction power to bring in, you know, new talent that could be super, super cool for Blade to work with. The problem is that you could look at a scenario where they would pull off a face where they, for 6 months, you know, is maybe the 10th best team in the world or the 12th best team in the world. I don't think that's going to be the case, but if that is going to be the case, then it also gets significantly harder for them to pull in talent, you know. And I want Blade to have great talent to work with. I want Blade to be able to point at some of the most, you know, interesting prospects, or point at a guy like Frozen and be like, I want that guy, come to my team and I'm going to make sure we win trophies together, because I think he has that ability. But you also need to be like relevant to some degree. You also need to be showing that, okay, if you're Frozen and you're looking at Na'Vi and they're just the 6th, 7th, maybe the 8th or 9th best team in the world, like there's a pretty long way to go from being number 8 to all of a sudden winning trophies, even though that you believe in your own abilities. So if anything, I think if I move away and distance myself from what I think of Na'Vi and Blade for that matter as well, I'm almost hoping that they just, you know, at least stay relevant to like a top 5, top 6 kind of lingo, because if that's the case, then I think by summer, if they still haven't figured it out, then at least they're still going to be attractive enough in order for some of the better prospects to join them. Because I'm with you. Like, I think Blade, I think Blade is fantastic, and I think he's one of the few coaches where I get the sense that there's a meaning behind everything he's doing. There's a meaning behind every time out he's taking. Like, and I know it's so hard from the outside to judge, you know, how a coach is impacting a game, and like, how are we supposed to know exactly what Halley's doing in Team Spirit with the language barrier, et cetera, et cetera. How are we supposed to know exactly what Neo does day to day in FaZe Clan? But I don't know about you, but I feel like at least Blade is transparent enough, and I hear enough from players who's played with him or even players from different teams who like respect him so much. And when you have a guy that where the repetition is like rock solid, regardless of what angle you're coming from or who you're talking to, then surely there must be something to it. So in all my humbleness, I'd almost say that I hope Blade is going to be able to finally get players that is worth his time. Because right now, I'm a little bit afraid that with what I said as well, I feel like the culture within Na'Vi is not really what he's looking for. I don't see Blade as a guy who's okay with you know, losing games because a player is losing it mentally. I feel like to him that should be like a crime in itself, you know, because that's going away from the plan, that's going away from the togetherness and the synergy that made Na'Vi in 2024 so good, and that in some essence also made his flip side so fucking good. I remember playing flip side many times during my career as well, and I swear to God, Duncan, like it was a fucking shit team. Whenever you looked at the players, like you were always going into that game thinking, you shit.
They had all people, Shara, like they had average ass players, bro. They were bad players, like, too, weren't they?
Best players was Will Did It or Bundig or whatever the fuck they were called back then. And I always had the feeling that, yeah, you're all shit, you know, shit per se, but they would always beat us, you know, and especially in the important games, especially in the major qualifiers. Like, I think I've missed out on two majors, and both of the two majors I missed out on in my active career, I lost to Flipside in the deciding game. And it was just one of those things where it's like, it didn't matter where I would position on the map, I would always get Molotov, or I would always be flashed out. Like it was so frustrating to play against. And I agree with you that if you have the ability to set up your team and everyone is living out your vision, so to speak, without being distracted by someone slamming a disc or someone wanting to be the ego player, et cetera, then essentially that is the perfect way of playing Counter-Strike. But I think for Blade, that's very hard to find with the current version of Na'Vi. Because I also do think that when I look at the current version of Na'Vi, they're not a top five team in terms of skill and individual powers they have available, right? I think he's doing a good job, you know, getting them to a semifinal at the major. I think that's a good result for what they have to work with.
Yeah. No, by the way, what do you think when I referenced like the MSL example? Because I think that's like a pretty extreme case of someone who did also think like, essentially, like, just trust what I call in the game like that. Because, you know, that was the era when people did, like I say, people wanted to play like Fnatic or how FaZe Now play. They were a bit loose. Because look, I know why players want it, because they want to have fun and they want to do what they feels right. But I also do think it's not totally inaccurate. There is a bit of that in modern CS as well. Like CS is played a little bit less like sort of rigid, right? Is it like you want some structure, but it feels like Na'Vi goes for the most structure. Sure.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that. I think there's a case to be made with the MSL point as well. I think what MSL is, he's just a prodigy of Glaive. Like he took what Glaive taught us back in the day, and then he basically took it to the extremes. You know, he wanted like a great example from MSL and something he was known for, and I think a lot of players were describing him with, like, he was the easiest in-game leader in the world to read. Like whenever anyone started to anti-stratting, like you'd always know that, okay, if this Molotov comes in at this timing, you could almost like visually say, okay, then that's gonna happen, and he's told this guy to run exactly this pattern. And at that point, like as soon as anti-stratting became a thing, that's when you exploited that weakness. So I think in terms of having MSL as like the golden example of that, he kind of took what Glaive taught us back then, because Glaive was also very like systematic in many approaches and also wanted like a bit of structure, but he also allowed a bit more freedom. And I think the problem with MSL is that at times in his career, he was doing a really, really good job at applying a lot of structure, but the second he had to innovate himself because of anti-stratting, because everyone started to look at demos and everyone started to watch through VODs, etc., he never involved, like he never got any better. And I think I've seen enough from Blade and pretty much any other in-game leader part of that era as well. Apex, great example, did an in-game lead back then, but obviously was aware of how Counter-Strike was played back then. Most people are able to move on, you know, and follow the system and follow the new rhythm and follow the new way of approaching Counter-Strike, whereas he was always stuck in his way. And I don't see that happening with Blade, to be honest. I think Na'Vi is also a team that allows a bit more freedom now, and is maybe a team that, like, it's also like, if imagine if you're Blade right now, like would you give those players too much freedom? Like, do you believe that those players with more freedom would be better than Vitality? Like, do you that if you give Bit enough freedom, is he just going to go in and own Flamesea and go in and own Saibu every single round? Probably not. Like, if you're Blade, you're thinking, how do I beat Falcons? Not by setting free my individuals, because if it's going to be a fist fight, then I'm going to fucking lose to Monesi, Nico, Kiyosuke, right? So I think he's also assessing the team, and he's like, you can only play ball with what you got, you know, and that's why I love Mourinho, you know. That's why he's my favorite coach of all time. I feel like he's like the prime example of a football coach who is always looking at what roster does he have to work with. Well, I'm going to play this style of football. At Real Madrid, well, different roster. I got Cristiano Ronaldo. Most scoring team ever. I'm going to play this type of
football. If people don't know the example, at Chelsea, everyone complained that they just parked the bus and won 1-0. And then he went to Real Madrid and they had like the goal record or something, mate. Like, they scored like 100 goals or something. Yeah, I agree, totally.
I agree, and I think Blade is similar in that approach. I think Blade is looking at the roster he has right now and be like, I cannot give them too much freedom. If I do that, then we're just going to be even worse, you know. So I think he's limited by what he has to work with. I'm not saying Blade is not a person you can look at and maybe be critical towards and say, are you getting the most out of these guys? Or did you sign the right players? Like, was Mikasa the right guy to bring up to the team? Maybe. Was it the right decision to keep Emma? Or was it the right decision to keep Wonderful? Like, question is decisions. And again, how much is that Blade? How much is that Na'Vi? How much is that contract? Fuck knows. But I think overall, if there's one coach in the world of Counter-Strike right now, I trust to like come back and make the most out of what he has to work with, it's Blade, which is also why I would fucking love to see a guy like Kerrigan work together with Blade. And that's not to say I want to get rid of LXB, because I think LXB could go to somewhere else and also be a cool prospect. But I don't know, if I could play football manager with the world of Counter-Strike right now, I'd almost say, you know, send Elixir B to face, see what he can do with us, that material, and then send Kerrigan to Na'Vi and see what he can do with Blade, you know, just to shuffle it up a bit.
I have one last topic, and it's actually one that flew under the radar a little bit, which is when 100 Thieves announced at the end that they were adding those young players, and they didn't do what BC Game did. They didn't buy the VRS course, and they didn't get the invites, as of like BC Game's going to be at Iron Krakow, etc. Right? There was actually an interview or something like that that Messi also did. Maybe it was a vlog, and I saw the quote from this, where basically what he said was, this is the shocking part. So everyone thought, wait a minute, if you don't buy a VRS call, well, my mate Snappy and NIP just went through that. You just have to play CCTs forever, mate, and then hope you eventually get in, right? Instead, what Messi also basically said, because obviously he's famously one of the people who knows the VRS system well, is he said, actually, they don't plan to play online tournaments that early on. They don't plan to play CCTs. Like, the idea is they won't play the tier 2 online grind. What they'll do is they'll wait till those small lands come where you can get just enough VRS points, and they'll sort of go and try to game the system. Now, that was even presented, this is like the kind of angle they took from it, that was presented as, you know, the idea that'll give, you know, for example, Rain the time to settle into being an IGL and things like that, right? The problem with that aspect is, I actually haven't seen many people comment either way on this, so I wonder what you think of that, because first of all, like, when he says that, I don't, again, I'm not Messi also, so I don't know when these lands begin. I don't know when the first land would be. I don't know, like, how well you have to do with them to actually make the major. Like, maybe he's had it, got it all figured out. Like, that sounds on paper like a good idea, but I don't know. I'm a bit suspect of it, especially because for me, here's the problem, Pimp, is this is a totally fresh roster. None of these players have played together as far as on their entire careers. Like, this, and some of them are even changing role. Like, obviously, Rain's become an IGL, Glaive's taken over as coach. Device is going to play with just, like, listen, NIP squad was way better than this when he joined it. Like, they had some, like, real LAN players and stuff. Like, you're working with, like, inexperienced players. Also, you've got players, by the way, just haven't played at Tier 1 LAN. So I want to know what you think of this actual aspect, the idea of not doing the online grind, not doing the CCTs. What do you think of that?
I think it's genius. I think it's a culmination of what VRS is supposed to be. And I think the reason, like, there's something we're going to look back at in a couple of years, you know, and be like, VRS was one of the best things ever to happen to Counter-Strike. I don't know if you notice it, right? But there's a lot of smaller tournaments popping up. Like, there's almost like a LAN that I never heard about every single weekend right now. And teams can travel, you know, whether you travel from Denmark to Sweden to play the LAN, or you travel to Romania, like Poland. Like, I've seen so many small pop-up LANs right now that all has VRS status that you can grind out. And I think, was it StarLadder, who just announced together with Stake, you know, a new tier 2 circuit almost, you know, only for tier 2 teams, where they could come in and you know, win tier 2 LAN tournaments, and then by then core up into the system. It's almost like we're getting to that, you know, grassroots tournament circuit we had back in, or we saw the beginning of in 2018, 2019, 2020, before COVID, and then COVID came and it killed it all, you know. So I personally, I like it a lot, and I think if there's one thing I've learned from, you know, both following Messi also, but also talking to him. Like, he's a genius when it comes to that. He's a massive fucking nerd. Like, he knows the inner workings of that, and he's already calculated like six different scenarios, you know, as in how do you get enough points to get to this point, to get to this point, to get to that point, and to compare it with NIP as well. It's vastly different. Like, there's so many more opportunities right now with the VIS system, with all these smaller tournaments popping up, that I have no doubt that it's easier, so to speak, to avoid the online grind and avoid the CCTs, etc. And let's be honest, if it ever gets to a point where they are lacking, let's say, 100 VIS points or 50 VIS points or whatever, then they'll play a CCT online. But if anything, he's just maximizing the opportunities for them to find success, because you'll be thinking like this, at least. Like, if you send Drain and you send Device, and then I don't really care who other they sign, you know, but some decent young prospects, and you build a team, if you send them to a land where the biggest competition is Ents or whatever team, or maybe Foot or what, like, you'd expect them to be doing good enough, you know, whether that's winning the event or placing second or third or fourth, but get enough points in order to do well enough just based on that experience. And I think that's where Glaive is a bit underrated as a coach as well, because he has spent the last 2 years playing in Ents, you know, and grinding out the tier two circuit. Like, so he knows what it's like to play those kind of teams, you know. And instead of, you know, obviously for him, it probably sucked to be in Ents and never competing at the bigger events anymore. But at least he now has experience to do exactly what he's supposed to do as a coach in that circuit to establish yourself. So I think if you're Messi also, you've done your calculations, you probably knew about some of the things that is just being announced now in advance. You know, I'm sure that he's been talking to different CEOs and has a better grasp of what's coming and what's not. And then I have no doubt that, like, I could have my doubt whether or not the Thieves are going to be a successful team as it is right now, but I have no doubt that they're taking the path that is going to be the easiest for them to establish themselves, to take one step at a time. And I just love the fact that they're not like, then they don't rely on qualifying for Cologne. I think a lot of teams are like, if we don't qualify for Cologne, it's project failed, it's not good enough. Yeah, they're in for the long term, and I think that's a cool thing and something we've been needing. And it's great to have an organization like the Thieves to invest a lot of money into Counter-Strike. And if anything, it just brings me more to the line of thought that I think Counter-Strike and the scene is moving towards a healthier place right now. The fact that we can have TOs like Starladder, you know, announcing a tier two circuit that is aimed at that, you know, almost like we had we played back in the day with the Academy League. Like, there's going to be more of these initiatives. We had the Danish tournament that's going to be played in Parken, that like set up a lot of VIS events, you know, some of them online, some of them LAN finals, etc. That is also aimed for tier two, tier three. So we have so many tiers right now. PGL came back into the mix for next year. They're gonna like combat the calendar as well, and I think there's gonna be overlapping between PGL and blah. Like, it's back to what we had in 2020 and 2019. And personally, I think that was the most fun years of Counter-Strike. I like the fact that you could send Na'Vi to a Starladder event, then you send Astralis to an IEM event, and they win their respective events, and you'd be like, oh, but next week they're now facing at this event, you know. So you could build up those stories, so it's not the same teams and the same storylines every single tournament. So I know I went a bit off record here, but yes, goodbye Messi also. I think it's the right thing to do for the Thieves. If anything, it's a sign of the scene being much more healthy, and also a sign of, you know, if they're successful with it, then a lot of people are probably going to look at the Thieves and look at NIP for that matter and be like, okay, so we can invest money into Counter right now. It's actually potential to make profit. And whether you do it with the notion that you want to pull off a heroic, where it's just you build a team, you get them into VIS, you get them into the qualifiers, sell off the core, start all over, do it one more time. I don't give a fuck. Like, as long as there's a business model that you can do, then do it. You know, you're sustainable for the scene. So I think it's a cool way of doing it if you're the Thieves, and I think it's a cool thing for the scene.
Here's the thing. I agree with the Messi also angle, because basically, if people don't know, I had him on one of my talk shows at the latter part of last year before the major, around the time when the qualifying was just finalising, like the last squads were going to those little lands. And one of the points he made, a lot of people missed this, was, yeah, when they got to the major, Paravision was actually half decent. They even got some good upsets. But if you ever look at who they beat to qualify to the major, it was insane. They completely gamed the system. I think there was some stat bro, like they hadn't beaten a single top 30 team to get there even. Because even the lands they went to were things like Russian lands or lands that no one else gave a fuck about. They didn't go to the same, you know, the Fragadelphias and those sorts of tournaments that the others did. So they uber-gamed the system, right? I do think he looked at that and probably even used that, by the way, as part of his angle for 100 Thieves. I mean, he said on the show then, because you know at the time everyone was saying, like I did, like, Valve should just hire this guy to run VRS or something like that and to explain it to everyone. The joke is, he said back then when he was just not doing any job after call, like he would have teams messaging him, like asking how how to calculate that shit, which is like, wait a minute, what? That's your job, mate. Like, why am I doing that for you? So I assume that was part of his sale to other things. Like, I can also, like, if we sign this roster, it's okay, I know how you sort of min-max and get in. The counterpoint is this, though. That's Messi Orso's job. My issue is this, Pimp. This roster's never played together. So the real issue I have is this. One thing I think is tricky is, as like, I understand online is different than LANs, but one reason why I'm actually a fan personally of the opposite approach, not the idea you wait before you go. Like, in my ideal world, even if you go to a LAN a week after you sign the roster, yeah, or what you do is you say, right, the first LANs are sort of like experimental. We'll figure out who we are and we'll test our limits. The problem I have is if you just play an online scrim, because you're not playing any official matches, this means, until you go to those first LANs. If you're only playing scrims, it can be hard to take from scrims and actually know how good you are, what works, you know, some of it maybe does work. Like, obviously, especially with some of the up-and-coming talent, maybe, like, the Poi guy, whatever, he was tearing it up online. Maybe he's shit hot online and he looks awesome. Haven't we all seen that story a million times? You go to the LAN and it's harder or it doesn't work out the same way, or you just aren't the same player. Are you not concerned about that as a counterpoint, as it were?
I am a little bit, but I also think it's easy to revert. You know, I think what's stopping them from looking at that and be like, okay, the first couple of lands went shit, now we're going to grind the CCT tournament. Like, now we're just going to use correction. Like, it's not like you're not putting yourself into a corner where you have to go one way or another. So I don't mind, you know, that being the first approach, but I'm sure that if they, as I said, like, if they need more points, or if they fail at the first couple of events, or if there's not enough of them or whatever, then there's always the CCT, there's always the online tournament. So I don't think it's... I don't think it's a risky way of doing it. I agree, though, like, in the sense that I'm an advocate for practice is practice, playing official games is playing official games. And you heard Magix even say, like, I spoke to him during the bounty. He said, like, he's a little bit sad that the format is the way it is because he wants to play more games with teams.
Sure.
Like, he wants to play more official games to get a sense of everything instead of just playing one or two best of threes online and then one or two best of threes at the playoff, and then you go into Krakow. Like, you would like to play more official games. So there's that notion as well. But I think it comes down to the temperament of the team. I think if you're in for the long run, you may as well start, you know, in a safe space and you know, power practice and make sure that you at least give yourself the best foundation to have a good experience the first time you show up. And then if it goes to shit or if it's not going the way you anticipated, you can always revert back and play two of the online tournaments instead of playing 10 of them. So I don't think there's a risk involved with not doing it.
No, I will just say as a final point, that's one area I do agree. Like, here's the, if it is true, by the way, that as like either this ends up working, it doesn't matter, they go to the small lands, they qualify anyway, or the lineup just works immediately and all these guesses were right. Rain can be an IGL, Glaive can be a coach, Device can work outside of a strat. If it all works out, yeah, totally fine. I will say as well, though, the one part I do totally agree with, whether it does or not, is I do think actually that in that sense, he's learned from the mistake I actually do think BC Game made. My theory on the BC Game move is this. I actually think the real reason why Simple was shit hot for a month and a half and then stopped giving a fuck is because that month and a half was when they were bidding for cores. So he thought, right, I'm getting ready to go to LAN. And then when he found out, wait a minute, there's no core coming this season. Basically, the season's done, mate. You're not going to play any LANs except that shitty little fucking, I think it was like a Red Bull LAN they played in fucking Sweden, mate. We're not going to play any LANs. It's probably, there's no major. Like, you're not quite, essentially, if you don't play any more CS now, you're playing in 2026 anyway, mate. That's when we're going to get the real team. I do think that actually made Simple just think, what the fucking point then? Like, why was I just grinding every other day and playing every, you know, like a match every 1.5 days? Like, that's ridiculous. That has to go somewhere. It can't just be for the sake of nothing. I'm not trying to really win, you know. But I can't remember the names of some of those tournaments they were in, bro. It wasn't even just CCTs. The joke is some of them were like small tournaments none of us even know the name of. They were nothing. So I do get the idea that, like, because that's the reason why I thought this was a tricky topic. I do think it would have been insane to take Device, who's just been to LANs for like his last 10 years of his career, and tell him, right, get ready, mate, because we're going to be playing 5 days a week online cops that don't go anywhere and you never go to a LAN. And it'd be like, mate, that's a great way to get someone to retire. Like, you get burned the fuck out. I actually think no player could do that. I actually do think it's why I don't totally go hard on BC Game and Simple. Like, I think you have to have an end goal that is possible. Like, that grinding and winning has to get me to the LAN, which is what I want to do in my career. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I know what you mean, but I think I also raised that point as well. I think last time we spoke about it, like, if I have to be a little bit cheeky with it, I think Device is hoping that the Thieves obviously find success, but not too much too early. I don't think Device is interested in traveling 200 a day playing tournaments.
Okay, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think he would like, you know, just play a couple of lands, you know, and instead of doing the grind that he did with Astralis, where they had to play every single land because they weren't sure whether or not they would make the major. They weren't sure whether or not they'd make stage 1, stage 2. Like, so they had to go to every event they possibly could. could. I think that was exhausting for him. So I think he's true. I think he's enjoying, you know, a little bit of a down period where all he has to do is practice, walk his dog, and maybe relax a little bit, and then build up a little bit of that motivation and eagerness to get back into land, but not too much, you know, not too early. So sure. I think he's okay with it, to be honest.